You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
So this year's theme is What is Atlanta's Social Media Niche? We sat at Manuel's, a big group of us, some of the original SoCon, I guess, inventors, those of us who said we need a conference about 3 years ago. And we said, well, what is this year's theme? What is Atlanta's social media niche? And we went through a lot of things that people say Atlanta's not. And one of the things people say Atlanta's not is we're no Silicon Valley. And that got us thinking. We have one of the founders of SoCon who has been very successful multiple times in his business. And just last year, we thought we lost him. We thought Atlanta lost him, but through Twitter and blogs, of course, he's still ever present in our life. And he has flown out here from Silicon Valley to tell you how Atlanta and Silicon Valley are different and what we can learn from Silicon Valley. So I'd like to introduce Jeff Haney.
Working here. We can stream live video across the internet, but we can't get the laptop working. So bear with us for a second. To see everybody here today. We started this about 3 years ago, as you've heard now, and a number of people I see in the audience, I don't even know who you are. I don't know your face. I don't recognize that. So I think that's a really good thing. Atlanta's been, tends to actually have a lot of events where there's a lot of people that come over and over, and you see some of the same faces. So it's really good to actually come to a great event, as big as this is this year, especially given the economic crisis. And seeing so many new faces, that's a wonderful thing. I don't think I've been gone that long, so it's good to see a bunch of people here. Lynn said there were about 80% of the people that signed up had titles CEO, President, Small Business. So that's very exciting. I think we continue to see a trend here at SoCon where a lot of people in the small business community are very interested in social media and the impact of social media on startups and small businesses. So it's good to see that that niche that we're continuing to develop. Does this work? Maybe. No, of course not. It's Mac. gosh. All right. Let's see how I can do this. Let's see. This is going to be interesting. So, if you don't know, I'm an open source developer by trade, a serial entrepreneur, I guess, by profession, and have been doing startups for quite a while. This is I'm embarrassed to say how many startups I've had, but this is quite a number of startups. We've got a new startup. It's not quite new. It's been around for 2 years, called Appcelerator. And this is my third VC-backed startup, so been quite doing this quite a while, and I'm not sure if I've gotten good at it or I've just failed a lot, but certainly I'm still doing it. I love being an entrepreneur. And I thought this was a really appropriate picture. It's kind of probably hard to see, but this is, I think Spaceship Earth is what I was reading they call this thing. And this was the first SoCon I took a picture of this, because I thought it was the most bizarre thing in the world. They constructed this huge thing, that ball that sits out front. And when I came, I'd never been to this new building when we first started SoCon 3 years ago. And I thought this was the most interesting picture. Like the thing had felt, the weight of the world literally fell over on this guy. Literally fell over. And I took a snapshot of it because I thought it was the most interesting thing. And I think that for a while, Kennesaw was trying to figure out, it was here for a while. They couldn't figure out what to do with it. I mean, how do you repair something this huge and that costly? And so it sat there for a long time. I don't know. Does anybody know how long it sat here, Lynn? Where did we left? Anybody kind of saw? Nobody knows? None of us know. Okay, well, it sat here for a long time, but I just noticed today it's back. And it's up, and I was reading in the little thing, it's been appraised at $4 million. And that's a pretty amazing thing. So I think it's a pretty appropriate, given the sign of times that we're in the economy, I think it's a pretty appropriate thing. It took a while to sort of repair this spaceship Earth, the world on top of this guy here. But we're back, and it's now worth a lot of money. And it's constructed and pretty nice and sitting out front. That's kind of a cool thing. So that was pretty appropriate. So today, my story really is I moved my company and my life and my family and three kids about 6 months ago to Mountain View, California, the heart of Silicon Valley, home of Google and Netscape and old days. And I guess that was quite controversial to a lot of people and caused quite a stir when that happened, especially since I grew up in Atlanta, I went to school in Atlanta. I've had quite a number of businesses here in Atlanta, and I've been very rooted in the community. A lot of people were frustrated by that. A lot of people, secretly sent me really nice messages saying, go, that's all the most awesome thing. You can't say that publicly, but I think it's a really great thing for you. And I would be doing the same thing if I were in your shoes. So today, I want to be sensitive. It's not very fun to stand up here and say, hey, how great Silicon Valley is and how terrible Atlanta is. That's not something I think anybody wants to hear. So instead, I thought I would actually sort of try to shape the conversation around what are sort of 9 things in 2009 you should be thinking about, especially as a small business, startup, entrepreneurs. We're in tough times here, so we need to sort of think about how we get through this. And I'll kind of contrast some things that I've learned in the Valley. I've only been there 6 months, but 6 months in social media world and in startup world is like a lifetime. So I'm going to try to actually talk about a few things in that context, and I'll try to be quick because I know I only got about 30 minutes. So I'm going to try to blow through some of this stuff, and then maybe if anybody wants to, as I go through some of these points, there's going to be 9 points. If I go through these, raise your hand, Jerry will come around, or I think just raise your hand and I can stop and we can make this interactive. This is an unconference. So at the end of the day, location is pretty important. What we've learned is that, on one dimension, location really doesn't matter. We've got the internet, we've got streaming video, we've got Twitter, we've got chat, we've got all sorts of wonderful things that allow us to communicate, connect around the world. At the end of the day, though, there's an offline component that's very important, and thus why we're in this room today, thus why we're networking with each other, thus why we had lunch, dinner last night to talk to each other and meet each other offline and create those bonds that sort of transcend from the offline world into the online world. And in business, that's still the same. It still is about relationships, and location is a very important thing. I did this analysis. I'm an engineer. I spent a lot of time thinking about it. I like to think about things in structured ways. So I did this sort of analysis, and quite a number of people sort of gave me this analogy when I was in the Valley last fall, talking to a bunch of people about the possibility of coming out. And so I thought I'd start off. This is an analogy somebody gave me. What is D.C. known for? Anybody? Government. Yeah, government. And Nashville?
Music.
Yeah, everybody knows that, you go to Nashville to be a music star, country music star. How about New York City? Boy, it's tough these days, though, isn't it? I wouldn't want to be a stockbroker in New York right now. And then Los Angeles. Yeah, so, location's pretty important. So what's Atlanta known for?
Airport.
That's a big thing, right? I mean, we've sort of, we've created a wonderful community around hip hop. I'm not sure we've completely embraced that as a community, but certainly a large part of the community has. Old media, journalism has been great. Lynn's got, an amazing set of things he's been doing. And I'm very proud of Kennesaw's leadership in this world. Biomed, the CDC's here. We've got a number of biomed startups. Medical startups, and security, certainly with ISS being the original big dog in security and spawned a lot of great companies in the security space. But it's been tough creating sort of a brand for Atlanta. I think it's a very important part. You know, each one of these big communities have branded themselves, whether they did it on purpose or whether it sort of organically happened over time. And I think Atlanta has somewhat of a brand problem. We don't really know what we want to be. We want to be a lot of things that we're not, and we want to be like a lot of other places, but we need to really figure out how to create our own niche. And the community's got to figure out how to do that. So you do that through success and repeat success, sort of creating clusters of opportunity and success, and sort of putting all your energy behind that. And that's not really any one person, not really any one government. It sort of happens organically, I think. So I spent a lot of time thinking about this, and as a software entrepreneur, location really matters to me, and I think it matters to a lot of people. Thus, we sort of see the aggregation of clustering of successful companies, and that sort of has a compounding effect. So I kind of thought about Atlanta, what sort of from a software standpoint, technology standpoint, who do we put up on a pedestal? Who do we talk about as our successes? And the left hand column is that MSA is probably one of the most foundational companies from a software standpoint. Certainly John Inway is well known in the startup community these days, and probably has been, probably every one of these companies to some degree have been influenced by John and Sig. And they were sort of the godfather of software in Atlanta, and still pretty much hold that today. Adam Software, Mindspring was a wonderful company during the heydays. We all love to talk about Mindspring. It was a great company. Charles Brewer, ISS, Jay Boss, most recently, although very few people realize that Jay Boss was actually in Atlanta because they were a traditional open source company that had to all over the world. And then you look at sort of the right side. I tried to, it's not exactly the same time frame, but sort of roughly sort of, sort of look at the same kind of companies and the same kind of timeline, Apple, Yahoo, eBay, Google, Facebook, all of which are here to some degree. Maybe Yahoo's on the fences a little bit, but we all know those brands. They all started roughly the same time frame. I think we all understand the impact that some of these companies have, good or bad, and different. So location, I think, does still matter. It matters a lot. For me as an entrepreneur, most businesses fail. And so for me, it was about how do you sort of raise the stakes and sort of put yourself in the best position. So that was kind of an important thing. This is pretty crude, especially given the economic crisis and a lot of people being laid off. But at the end of the day, as a startup, as an entrepreneur, it's about survival. And the hardest thing, the most important thing, certainly from a financial standpoint, the people costs are the most expensive component of any business, usually, almost 90% of the time, more than 90% of the time. So your people really shape the company, they shape the vision of the company, the passion that the company has, and the brand that it projects to the world. And you gotta have the best people working for you. And I think a lot of what's going on right now, frankly, are a lot of companies taking sort of advantage of the situation and looking at the bottom 10% of their business and figuring out how do we sort of clean some of that out and all the fat that we've created. And so hiring the wrong people, hiring the right people is always difficult because you don't always know ahead of time. That's the thing that each of you struggle with building businesses. It's the single most hardest thing, when somebody asks me what's the hardest thing about building business, is it raising money, is it coming up with ideas, it's really none of that. It's actually getting great people together that share the same vision and that bring a bunch of different skills and can sort of execute together. So hiring the wrong people, we all probably know the cost of getting wrong people, working with the wrong people. The wrong people don't necessarily mean bad people. They certainly, sometimes I've had lots of great people that work for us that didn't work out because of personality or skill set, et cetera. So they cost you time, money. There's a cultural impact for having the wrong people. So as you're thinking about your business, I think it's very important to think about, do you have the right people aligned that you're aligned with and are working with you that are behind the company?
Do you think it's better to don't start the business until you have the right people, or start the business wrong?
Well, it's never right to have the wrong people, but there's no perfection in getting the right people. It's a difficult thing to get people. And often people, often you can become paralyzed in a startup trying to find the right people. It's a sort of play-by-play thing. You have to sort of judge that. I think the hardest part that happens in any business is when you get the wrong person, usually you know it in your gut, And you delay how long you, especially big companies are, you know, sort of, you know, institutionally paralyzed when it comes to sort of moving people out of the organization. They typically, and we see this in Dilbert, and we see this a lot of times, they move people into, you know, in the organization. You know, oftentimes people even get promoted, the worst people, you know, because they're not the doers, they're the producers, the ones doing the work can't stand them, so they sort of move them out, move them into, you know, management. Terrible thing, right? We have to work with those people. So oftentimes, yeah, I think it's the most crippling thing in a startup is when you have the wrong people. You got to sort of remix it. It's a difficult thing. Nobody wants to lay anybody off. Nobody wants to part ways with people, especially in sort of the current crisis. But for the survival of the business, oftentimes, it's very important, especially the smaller you are. The smaller you are, the more important it is, of course, to find the right people. You know, a lot of people will tell me right now, oh my God, it's the best time in the world to be hiring. And you got all these great people on the street and they're looking for jobs and you know, the salary, you know, salaries are coming down, et cetera. And I think that's true to some degree. It's also makes it more difficult because I think the brutal honesty is that, and this is sort of changing a little bit with the kind of craziness that's going on in the world, sort of everything that we know about sort of sanity when it comes to business and finance is sort of being thrown out the door here. But traditionally, oftentimes, and again, this is going to sound a little crude, but if you're getting laid off, a lot of times, it's not always the case, but a lot of times it wasn't the right position and it probably won't be the right position for you. So you have to sort of scrutinize a little bit more, I think, in these times because there isn't an inundation of people that want jobs and looking for jobs, and you need to sort of, you know, vet those out a little bit better. I like to say that in every business I've started, and especially on this one, I like to surround myself. I think it's a good thing from a life coach, from a business coach standpoint, to surround yourself with people that know more than you, that are more successful than you, have much more experience than yourself. No matter how successful you are, there's somebody else way more successful than you. So I call these people challengers. I have several of these people that work with me that really challenge me and push me and really try to, you know, question what we're doing in a very constructive way. And I think that's a very good thing, whether it's somebody that's an advisor to the company, an investor, et cetera. That's a very good thing to keep honest and keep working hard. You know, in a startup, this is the one thing about the Valley that I think is quite dramatically different than probably here, and I've not lived in a lot of other places from a technology community standpoint, but certainly different than here, quite dramatically different than here than the Valley, and it's also being outside of the Valley, looking on the inside now, looking out, and being on the outside sort of looking in. There's oftentimes this conception that the Valley is crazy and bubble, and often most of the times it is. And that these guys, why are they doing Twitter? Why? How can they have this crazy valuation? And how, there's no way there'll ever be a business model, et cetera. And oftentimes, you know, I think we've seen this as big companies go big, like Facebook. And we're sitting here going, oh, okay, I kind of get it now. I think a lot of what the Valley has become very good at is analysis, but not spreadsheet jockey, as my friend Sanjay would like to say. This is analysis, not for analysis paralysis and financial spreadsheet stuff, but measurement of really understanding data, quantifiable metrics, understanding, you know, testing theories through A/B testing, refining models, and frankly shutting things down that aren't going to succeed or don't have a good chance to succeed that they can't believe in. I think Atlantis historically has a very difficult problem. There's lots of companies, even today, there's companies that are, at least brand-wise and people-wise, that are still around from the dot-com days that should have died years ago. I won't name any names, but I heard one recently and I was just shocked. And so I think, you know, there's a real focus on, as crazy it might seem from the outside world, but on the inside there's a strong focus and a strong bias towards measure, understand what's going on. And you see a lot of that when you're on the inside and sort of talking to companies and working with VCs on the left coast. And that's really shaped how we sort of execute, and it's been really good for us in our business, and we're learning to keep up.
The A/B test.
A-B test is like if you, let's say you want to make a change to your website. What do you do? You throw it up there. Oh, I got some good ideas. I'm just going to change my website, change some copy, and put it up there, right? Smart, we're smart people. We know what our customers want. An A-B test is, and there's lots of great tools. In fact, Google has a tool that allows you to do A-B testing automatically. A-B test is simply where you do an A and a B test, and you let the data tell you what's best. So you might write two pieces of copy. You might use a graph that goes on the right and a graph that goes on the left, and you might run, you know, run that. And what we continue to run into out there is everything is A-B tested. It's the most minor thing, graphical placement, things below the fold, above the fold, everything, because it, you know, if you're, you know, oftentimes like in a web company, for example, it's traffic and sort of, you know, the aggregation of lots of people using your software or your website, et cetera. And every little 1% improvement could mean dramatic different in your funnel and your turnover, conversion, et cetera. So an A-B test simply is just let the data decide. You know, put it out there. We did this about a year ago on a website we had. We had this great, you know, everybody in the company and outside of the company was telling us, oh, we can't have this sign-up thing. We need to just remove that. Well, we ended up doing an A-B test, and that was the case. Quite dramatic change. Okay, cash is king. I think everybody knows this. Startups really is about a survival game, ultimately. Not to survive, you know, at least a venture capital-based startup isn't just to survive forever and have a lifestyle business. It's, you know, you have a window of opportunity, a window of time to execute. But survival requires capital. Capital is money. You know, one of my big things I've been telling people, and I think this is, you know, a lot of people have been doing anyway, is you got to reduce your burn somehow. That may not be good for the overall economy, but at the end of the day, it's about survival as a company. So you got to figure out how you can trim the fat. Try to figure out how you can reduce your expenses. Get more money if you can. We just raised $4 million of Series A from a big VC out in the West Coast. And we just closed yesterday another $1 million from Silicon Valley Bank, the term debt deal. And everybody's like, well, why did you do that? Well, because it's more money. And it was relatively cheap, and it's like an insurance policy, and we've got money in the bank, but we need more, you know, just having more money is good. So get more money if you can. Don't worry about valuation, it's gonna suck. But survival is way more important. Most likely, so conserve your cash, generate more cash. Some of this seems pretty obvious, but you'll be amazed how many people I've talked to that are still saying, ah, we're still gonna hire a bunch of people, and we're gonna, you know, it's not a big deal, it's a psychology thing, and it'll be over in a few months. I don't know. Raise money if you can. Collaborate with your community. It's very important. Your community, your community is defined by, you know, by each situation. You know, your community may simply be your customers, people who buy your product or buy your service. You know, it really depends on what your business is, defines your community. But at the end of the day, your community, I think one of the things that I think is going to be good about the sort of downturn and sort of the focus on social media, social networking things is that we've created two-way interactions now with our customers and our constituents, and that's a really good thing. People actually have a voice now, and it matters.
You also saying that you make it bigger, get out of it. If you are conserving, then you are not able to create value to make some sustainable advantage. Then you are making a living. It's better to find a consortium as a job.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's what I was meaning by, you know, there's a time frame, and, you know, we're going through a situation right now where it's a little different. I mean, if you're doing your same business, you're in the same growth trajectory 4 or 5 years out, at least as a kind of a venture-backed startup or one that aspires to be, and you haven't sort of found your groove and started to really take off, you know, you really need to be thinking about it. If you're just getting started or you're into it 2 years and sort of the economic crisis sort of you know, pounding on us, there's a lot of great businesses out there right now, private, public, that are really in trouble, but not their fundamentals. Fundamentals are great. So I think you gotta use your best judgment for that. And again, having some people outside of your sort of friends and sphere of influence and sort of giving good advice about that will be very helpful, because we tend to sort of introspect ourselves and sort of be way overly optimistic. Communities will tell you what they want if you'll listen. You know, that's the hardest thing, I think, for a lot of bigger companies, you know, is they don't listen well. People are telling them what they want. think global, act local. I mean, you know, we're sort of doing that today, I think. There's a lot of wonderful things. I mean, it's amazing since I've left how many great things are happening. I know Tessa and Sanjay have been doing lots of jellies and co-workings across the, city. You know, I know there's an OTP versus ITP debate, and, you know, great, start more. I mean, nobody has a, you know, franchise on this. Start more, you know, get two or three people, go work somewhere, and Twitter about it, and get other people to do that. You know, you don't have to join a, you know, one of the ones that already exists if you live, you know, 20 miles across town. Startup Riot, know Sanjay, Startup Gauntlet. There's lots of activities. Google these things, you'll find great amounts of information. Mike Schinkel with the Entrepreneurs continue to growing. Great resources here. ATD's got a lot of great resources. There's an amazing amount. SoCon, obviously, we're all here. There's a lot of great local things. There's also some very exciting new funding opportunities. I think there's a lot of complaints that Atlanta doesn't have money and the investment community and blah, 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 blah. There's plenty of money here. Plenty of money that will find good deals. Don't worry. You know, good, if you got something that you can create, amazing, people will go out of their way to get to you to find it. It doesn't matter where you're at. But there's some very exciting things. This is worth noting. Angel Lounge, Startup Lounge, now they have sort of this Angel Lounge thing. That's now up to, Scott told me last night, 100 angel investors. Shotput Ventures, I'll talk a little bit more about that in detail. That's a brand new venture. It's a very exciting thing to me because it's something we tried to work on when I was here a while back. Some of the same people. Tech Operators, a smaller fund here in town, but they're entrepreneurs, people that have really made it, like Saeed Mohammedian, and Tom Noon and some others. Esmond Fund with ATC, Landsea Funds, a new sort of thing that's trying to get off the ground, again, entrepreneurs. You know, have a plan B and C. This is going to be hard. I mean, most entrepreneurs, I mean, what's that saying about the best laid plans? There's some saying about that. You know, you'll end up in a different place than you began, guaranteed. I talk to a lot of people who say, oh, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to be, and, you know, this is it. And that, hopefully, that's good. That may be true. But most likely, you'll probably be in a completely different place than you started. And entrepreneurs are classically over-optimistic. That's the biggest problem I think we have as entrepreneurs. We are sort of, nobody else knows my business, which is true. But we're classically over-optimistic. We're terrible planners, usually. We're very stubborn. That's what makes us entrepreneurs, right? We would be working for corporate America if we weren't. We fell in line. It's a great time to be building your network. I mean, we're here talking about this today and networking and meeting new people, and Twitter gives us this sort of interesting opportunity to sort of expand our network in a global way, lots of other kind of capabilities. At the end, it's about relationships. That's the hardest thing I need to balance right now. We're sort of seeing that in government, big government. We're seeing that in sort of what happened with the economic crisis right now, where, you know, you mix sort of politics and private, professional, and at the end of the day, it's about relationships. It's hard. Human beings have to relate to each other, and friendships ultimately sort of play into that. So LinkedIn, Facebook, hopefully everybody, if you're not, go see Sherry if you're not on one of these things, because you need to be. But it's a great time to be building your network. I wrote a funny blog article a while back. It's probably one of my top blog articles, and it was about ideas. I talk to so many people every conference I go to that have an idea. Oh, I've got an idea, but I can't tell you that. Your idea sucks, okay? Nobody cares about your idea. It's your idea, right? I mean, get heads down, execute. Nobody wants to hear about your idea, especially when you won't tell them about it, and so you're not really sure. So stop telling people about your idea, execute. At the end of the day, it's about success. Tell the world that you're success. People will know, if you're succeeding, we want to know about your great idea. But your idea sucks. It's your idea. It may not actually suck. It actually may be the coolest idea in the world. But stop telling people that you've got the greatest idea in the world. You just need $5 million in a team and the technology group, and you need to invent the product. And, that's wonderful. Ideas are dime a dozen. Everybody in the world has ideas. People that execute that matter. So we have a long, to kind of recap, we have a long road ahead of us, I think. From an economic standpoint, as a community in Atlanta, there's a lot of great promise. People in the room, it's the people around the community that are actually going to make the community, not some magic foundation or some great government entity that going to make that happen. It's companies like Shop to Ventures. You know, if you haven't heard, I encourage you to check their website out. They're kind of an accelerator fund. It's a group of angels, successful startup people that have gotten together, pooled their money together to create these sort of smaller businesses. It's a really very interesting thing. It's not perfect for everybody, but it's very interesting if you have a certain type of idea in a certain stage of your life. It's got some great people, names that you may or may not recognize. Mitch Fried, for example, at MFG.com. There's a lot of really great people here, very successful people that are involved. They're putting $5,000 per team plus $5,000 per founder. They're accepting applications very, very soon here. It's sort of a Y Combinator-like thing for Atlanta with some entrepreneurs that have done this. A number of them have done it from scratch several times. They run you through a program. They give you a lot of help, a lot of advice, some money, et cetera. They're going to fund 8 companies this summer. That's a very, very exciting thing. I think it's very, you know, we've been talking about this now for several years, and it's a very exciting thing. And just to recap, I mean, nothing stands between you and your sex, except probably you yourself. So, you know, network this weekend or, you know, today. Yeah, I'd love to hear from anybody who wants to talk a little bit more about the Valley, et cetera, experience. But thanks for coming. It's been great. I'm glad to sort of meet everybody here. I'd love to meet you in person if you'd come up afterwards and introduce yourself. Thank you.
The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on Magnatune.com. Thanks for listening to Unconcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of Unconcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.